Well, that was pretty slow anyway. We've just come into a conversation. It looks like it's a junior, just learning his Morse and he's practicing. And what he said was, okay, just being in your shack, I am just in to hear your QRA. And QRA means your name.
So he's just picking you up from somewhere?
Yeah. Well, he's not. He's talking to somebody else because we're just listening into this conversation.
You're not transmitting.
We're not transmitting. And we're getting youngsters now and older people are learning the Morse code. It isn't dead. And there, you see, this Morse now is much faster. But the other guy behind it is still trying. He's trying to do it.
Who'll be teaching this guy? Is he on a ship somewhere, do you think? Or
no,
is he at a college? Or?
I think in this case, he'd probably be in his own home.
Yeah.
And he has an automatic rig. I'll just turn this down a bit.
Okay.
So he's got an amateur radio gear. And he's listening to stations and listening for stations who are sending a Morse at a sufficient speed for him to read, because it's no use talking to somebody if they send a lot of very fast Morse back to you. You can't read it. So what they're all doing now, they can get a license now for having about 6 words a minute.
Yeah.
And the idea is
a license slow speed then.
Yes. So that they can start to take part in this amateur radio.
Yeah.
And to give the youngsters a chance to come into it, and I keep saying youngsters, but people who are new to it.
Yeah.
It could be people in their 70s,
yeah,
or it could be it could be 10 or 11 years old.
But they're young in terms of doing this.
That's right, yeah.
So is there a lot of people who are like still very excited by Morse and they're wanting to come and learn it?
Yes,
so there's still this real building community of Morse users.
Because it's something unique, it's something different. You feel you are unique. You can do it, and other people can't.
It's a language,
so you feel it's a language, and the speeds with a really qualified man, they can be talking at 30 words a minute. Which is fantastic.
It's almost as fast. Is that faster than normal speech? Almost.
Well, I think it must be getting close to it, and other people, they're so good at it, they can be holding a conversation with people next to them or rolling the cigarette like they used to do in the old days while they're doing it. And it is fantastic that this is still there. I mean, they were going to do away with Morse, but Morse, if we come back, we don't want to go to any war situation, but they used to do it with a light, an oldest light, and they could point it at the vessel they wanted to communicate with and talk to that ship with a light. And nobody could eavesdrop it because it was beamed at them. You had to be in line of sight.
So it had to be quite a sharp focus light.
Yes, to read it. And this is how they used to communicate in the convoys.
All right, so you'd send a light down the convoy.
Yeah, you'd flash to the next ship. And do it that way, so that it was just in your little patch, as it were.
Yeah.
You weren't if you'd have gone on the radio, then the submarines would have been listening for you and all the other people, and they would know where you were because they could take a direction.
So if Morse couldn't be like a kind of secret thing because other people could pick it up, what was its function?
Well, it was because it could be sent in code.
Oh, right, of course, so you can do the same kind of coded language.
Yes, that's right, yes.
So someone would receive the letters and then they'd have to
code it. It was code breaking.
Oh, my God, so there were double languages.
The Japanese Morse?
Yes, the Japanese had, with the different characters that they had.
Oh, my God,
and there was a very famous guy. What was his name? We can all remember.
He was a member of our club.
Yeah.
He was a member of the World Amateur Radio Club.
Yeah.
And he was actually trained
to read,
to read Japanese
and transmit.
Transmit.
And he used to mimic. He used to mimic that he was a Japanese station.
Because
he was dropped in one of the Philippine islands, just by submarine, and he was actually instrumental in the Battle of the Coral Sea, I think it was.
Yes, that's right.
And the Americans would have been wiped out. still probably still official secret, like,
but
he was actually...
I'll blank that bit out.
He actually picked up these signals between the Japanese aircraft carriers, where they were going, and by virtue of that, they knew where not to be.
That's
so
amazing.
The outcome of the Battle of the Coral Sea was instrumental with him, and he... Just imagine being dropped on an isolated island on your own. So if the Japanese turned up, where are you going to run to?
Ah, right, that's amazing.
Do you know the the television detective, Morse?
Morse, yeah.
Have you heard the introduction to that?
The tune, the lead tune.
The tune is actually playing
Morse. Oh, that's right. Yes. And does it say Morse?
Morse, yes.
Yes, yes, it does.
And spells his name off. Do you know the American Native Indians?
Yeah.
There's a film just being made now, and there was Official Secrets Act, not just ours, Americans, and it was swept to one side. And as much as you can have codes and what have you, there's always somebody who's able to break them.
Yeah.
I.e. the Enigma codes.
Yeah.
Right. But they discovered that, like,
language.
You know, like you've got Latin, a dead language.
Yes.
These, I think it was the Seminole Indians had their own language. And they got a group of GIs who were Native Americans. And they it's like a Welsh, only the Welsh people know.
Yeah, that's
but on
amazing.
A smaller scale. Yeah. And there's a movie just been made.
So they used this language
They used that. In Morse,
communicate,
but they were talking in Seminole in Morse.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the only ones who knew was the Seminole Indians, so one end and one the other.
I've never considered about foreign languages in Morse, actually. But
so
how does the Japanese
English.
Work? Does it get translated into
into
Western characters and
it's in dots and dashes. Yeah. The same as ours,
more, isn't it, Stan?
But there's more of them because they have
the
more characters.
And the character represents a lot
and
of things.
They copied certain characters and modified.
What's the biggest? Ours is six characters, isn't it? I suppose. Yeah. Da da di da da, something like that.
What's that?
Oh, da da di da da. There's a comma.
Comma.
Da di da da. This.
Yeah.
Is it an oblique stroke?
So you can do punctuation as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You can do enclosed brackets.
Yeah.
All sorts. Equals.
Can you do speech marks?
Plus.
Quotation marks.
You can do all sorts.
Did it, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, that's the end. That's the dot.
Yeah, there's all sorts. I should have fetched the thing down because. Yeah. Pursuant to what we're doing here, when we get young kids and scout groups and that, we've thought for a while and mentioned it that as the scouts do have a communications badge.
Oh, really?
Right. Do that.
And part of it, we do get involved with WAVES, actually, which is a worldwide guides thing, and help them. But I thought, we could hand out a little piece of paper with the alphabet, the Morse characters, and the phonetics of it.
Yeah.
You know, like K is dot, dot, dash, dot. Didatis, isn't it? Didatis.
Yeah.
See, so you, even though you look at it, you've got to know how to
translate it. So you two could speak to each other in Morse.
So I've done this, but on the bottom I've done the numbers as well.
Yeah.
And the numbers are like, one is one dot and four dashes.
Yeah.
Two is two dots and three dashes.
Yeah.
And then you reverse it for six. Seven, eight, nine.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
you reverse
amazing.
It.
Yeah.
So five is five dots
and
zero is five dashes.
Before you go any further, I need to introduce you properly. And I just started because Stan was doing something really nice with the Morse machine. So no, it's fine. But I'm here with Stan McNally.
Yes, that's right.
And he's from the Liverpool and Marine Electronic Radio.
We're Liverpool Marine Radio and Electronics Society, but I'm also here in the capacity, I'm chairman of the Mersey Light Vessel Preservation Society. This is for the lightship, the Bar lightship.
And we're standing on the lightship, in the lightship as we speak. So
that's right.
Do you want to tell the listeners exactly where we are?
Well, we're in what we call the exhibition room here. In this exhibition room, we have a vast collection, but only small, I must admit, of radio equipment which has been taken from other ships, which we're all going to end up in the scrap heap. This particular piece of equipment now is called an Ocean Span 7. a Marconi piece of equipment, and that came off the Lady of Man, which is quite a famous vessel for Liverpool here. We've got this other piece of equipment here, which is an AEI emergency rig. And this is probably our oldest piece of equipment. This was put on board ships because it went off 24 volts. So if the ship lost its main power and it was in distress, you could send off a distress message on 500 kcs indicating that the ship was in distress, so that you would have somebody come for your assistance. The automatic keying device is put on here so that we could have switched it off over to auto, and as long as the batteries were still alive and the ship was still afloat, the transmitter would continue to send the SOS message and the call sign and a long dash, so that ships coming to your rescue would be able to take a bearing of it and come and know where you were.
And is that signal in Morse?
Yes. It sends SOS. It sends.
So that doesn't need a man here?
No.
It carries on?
Once you'd sent your message, you sent off your message with the position and things like that, and you and the captain were the last people to leave the vessel. And then you would leave it in auto, and it would continue to send. You see, it's got marked distress here. You would switch it to distress, and you would switch it the keying over to the emergency transmitter. And then as long as the power was there and the aerial was still up, it would continue to send. And that's probably our oldest piece at the moment.
Tell us about what the lightship is, because it's very particular, isn't it?
Well, it is very particular to us in Merseyside, because it was built by the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company for the Liverpool Bar. And that's the...
Is that
the
sandbar?
That's the sandbar. Well, where all the ships coming from around the world, when they're looking for the port of Liverpool, they would come to the lightship and anchor. And they would know then that they were at the start point for going into Liverpool. And the lightship would be there to say that it was a safe watermark there and they could anchor. And they also had on this ship a DF beacon, which is a radio beacon, I should say, so that it would transmit a signal over the air. And ships in the air looking for Liverpool would listen for the special call sign which it sent. It was BR, dar did it it did ar did. And then it would go da, a long dash. And the ships would get the radio officers on these ships would take a bearing, a radio bearing of this lightship. And the captain would turn the vessel round until the vessel approaching the bar lightship was zero. And they would steam along that zero line.
This one's called Planet, isn't it?
This is called Planet. Planet. Yeah, it is. And I know it's a cliche, saving the planet, but it has so many connotations.
Yeah.
It's saving our history and things like that, which is very important to our generation, because we cut our teeth at sea, and we all this equipment, you know, we cherished and kept going because that was our communication with the outside world, and it means a lot to us. And we would, being part of the Merchant Navy means a lot to us. We all had jobs. We were a team. Even, you know, anybody missing from that team, really, it was like a mosaic. You didn't see the whole picture until everybody was there, even down to the galley boy. He had his job to do. The crewman working the winches or tying the ropes or doing a bit of painting. The master on the bridge, everybody had their thing to do.
Like a sort of human machine.
It is, yeah. But it was a team that worked together. And we were at sea for long times. I mean, I did a sail from the Baltic with coal all the way down through the Kiel Canal, right down to South America with coal.
And that was you always communications.
I was the only radio officer on board as we were. Most ships, tramp ships, just carried one communicator, the radio officer.
And you were saying before that those sometimes people thought they did nothing, the communicator.
Yeah, that's right. But we listened to weather forecasts. We were able to tell them what was due to them. And we got messages if the ship, how would, you know, we might get our orders changed. And we were the ones that took it. And that is why we were always, people would try and find out exactly where they were going to go when they were coming home, if Sparks would know. But we had to sign the Official Secrecy Act.
Oh, really?
So we couldn't divulge this thing. It would have to come through the master. And we were sort of the master's right-hand man in many respects, because we were his communicator and his communication with the outside world and everything like that.
So you were saying before that you can kind of pick up all over the world from these machines.
Oh, yes, yeah. Depending on the time of the day and the frequency you use, mm-hmm. you can get very vast area, vast distances. And now with satellites now, you can communicate with satellites and very small power. But I don't know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I think if a meteorite storm went through the satellite system of this world, I wonder what communications would be like then.
Yeah. The invisibility of radio is amazing, the fact that, you know, there isn't a satellite in the sky, it's just between points.
That's right, yes it is. But you do use the world's facilities to get you these ranges. Around the Earth, there's layers. And when the sun comes up and goes down, the density of these layers changes. So we can transmit a signal and it'll bounce off these layers and go leapfrogging around the world. And this is how you get long-range communication.
That's amazing. Yeah. I didn't realise.
It does. And depending on what the frequency you use, you can make use of the three layers around the Earth. And it's all affected by ionization and the sun's rays and things like that. There's so many things that might seem idiotic and not necessary to know. But it's just going back to the Aborigines where they used to talk about things and hand on little bits and pieces to the future generation and things like that.
In a very sort of conscious way.
Wait, that's right. And you're handing on to something which you mightn't have to use, but you've got it there.
Security. So
this is why we feel if we can buy this light ship, get enough money. We want 400,000, which seems a heck of a lot of money, but what we look at it to bring it down to reality, there's more than 400,000 people have been in the Merchant Navy in the Northwest.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And if they all threw a pound in, that would do it. And we would like to be able to buy the ship and restore it to as you see in the photograph over in the painting over there.
Mm-hmm. I've just wanted to add a little bit on that. If people are interested in finding more about the organisation, Stan, I'm just going to ask Stan to give the name clearly again and the website details.
Okay, yes, well, our website is www.barlightvessel, all in lowercase, .org.uk.
Let's have one more listen to Morse,
Thanks for... call. Thanks for the call. Well, thanks for coming anyway.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was brilliant. Thank you very much, Stan.